What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Five Rounds today. We are here in downtown Toronto, John Ramdean, alongside Robin Black, as we are getting set for what is promising to be one of the biggest cards in UFC history. UFC 202 going down at the T-Mobile Arena this Saturday night, the rematch between Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz. However, later in the show, we'll be joined by Canadian mixed martial arts promoter and, dare I say, pioneer of mixed martial arts, Stefan Patry, who has created one of the greatest mixed martial arts organizations ever in history with TKO, a promotion that helped spawn the careers of George St. Pierre, Mark Hominick, Sam Stout, Pat Cote, and countless others that the TKO organization returning November 4th. We're going to be joined by Stefan Patry. Oh. We're going to go back to UFC 202. Have you processed that? Have you processed that Saturday night we're going to get a chance to witness the rematch? Are we going to see Nate Diaz put on a dominant performance, take out Conor McGregor because he has a full training camp? Did Conor go back to the drawing board and realize what it actually takes to beat this bigger, powerful, tougher, mental giant in Nathan Diaz? Is it what people anticipate in their mind, or are we going to get to see something completely different?
Ooh, it's going to look different than last time, no doubt about that. It's a crazy one, and this amount of time.
And sorry to cut you off. Do you see just multiple possibilities with the way the fight will look?
I do see multiple possibilities, but I see a particular approach by McGregor and John Kavanaugh. Now, the approach that they believe will win, I think I know what it is because we looked at the same evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't talked to John Kavanaugh. I followed a little bit of what he said.
But he responded to one of your breakdowns saying, great stuff.
He said it was bang on, which is nice. But, you know, I left out leg kicks. It's an interesting thing. You got to do a breakdown. What you want to do is give insight. You want to share, you know, views and thoughts and perspectives on fighting. But it's also a television piece. So something, for example, like throw leg kicks, get some leg kicks going and how to get them going and how to use them. There's no footage of McGregor really. I think he threw one leg kick in the last number of fights, a typical Muay Thai low kick that does damage. He uses that
side kick
or the oblique kick, people call it. It's a side kick or a cut kick, they call it in Taekwondo. He uses that, but he very little uses the Muay Thai style low kick, which people then goes, well, Conor doesn't do that. Of course he does that. Every fighter does that. There's no boxer who can't throw an uppercut. Now, there are boxers who throw better and worse uppercuts and faster and slower and the ability to generate force different. But every elite boxer can throw an uppercut and every elite fighter can throw a low kick. I mean, Conor McGregor has thrown tens of thousands in his life like every other fighter has. He just hasn't used them or seen the opportunity to use them or believe they worked into how he was fighting before. And I think against Diaz, you want to kick his leg. Mm-hmm. I think it's one really important thing. So that wasn't in the breakdown. If I was John Kavanaugh watching it saying, hey, nice job, I wouldn't be, oh, but you forgot leg kicks. But I have a feeling that's part of it. But there's Diaz, if you approach him and say he is this thing, well, that's exactly what I'm saying don't do about Conor. You can't say he doesn't throw leg kicks. Of course he does. At the same time, you go, Nate Diaz is this. Nate Diaz isn't that. Nate Diaz has been that most fights. But Nate Diaz can be whatever he wants to be. These guys can change the way they approach fights. McGregor's going to do that. And most people aren't thinking Diaz is, but I have a feeling he will too. And that's why it's going to be so cool. One of the ones, for example, oh, you know, the Diaz brothers, they're heavy on the front leg. Well,
they have been.
Yeah. Five or six analysts or commentators or Jack Slack or Joe Rogan or whoever, myself, have said sometime in the last 4 or 5 years, I remember when we were first breaking down Nick Diaz versus Carlos Condit back at the old office.
Yep.
I said he's going to kick that guy's leg. He's heavy on the front leg. That was five years, seven, 6 years ago. That doesn't mean it's true forever.
Yeah.
So people, you'll see, oh, well, Diaz is heavy on the front leg. Go watch him. Watch him now. He checks the odd kick. He's better at it than he used to be. Not better enough to stop RDA from doing it to him, but he's better at it because he's not a f***ing idiot. He's not sitting around while we're all analyzing him and him going, huh. Diaz is looking at himself and going, what could I change too? So It's very strange that we do that. It's like Diaz has these problems, and Diaz is like,
see, I think one of the reasons why I agree with everything that you're saying, but I think people get confused because, you know, as you've seen, as you've been a part of, our job is to go and try to find the truths from fighters mm-hmm. and from coaches and to try to find the best story and what works inside of the cage. And a lot of the times you've heard the answer, you know, your opponent does this. Oh, I'm just not concerned with what they're doing, what they bring to the table. So for Connor, why would he even be looking at the fact that Nate's not checking kicks, that Nate's not doing this, that he is getting better at these certain areas? Or is it just like, okay, these are things that I feel that I can execute in the fight?
Well, those are based on what you attribute to Nate Diaz being Nate Diaz. So it's like, what did we learn from the last fight? That's a bunch of information that using that information, it gives us a strategy change. The what makes fights so interesting is anybody sitting around, this goes for Kavanaugh or any of us who sit around watching fights or talking about fights, or, you know, Cormier shows up on Wednesday to shoot, you know, UFC tonight, and he goes, oh, Nate Diaz, you know, any of us that are sitting around talking, any of us other than the two guys in there, we're missing all kinds of information, and that's it's counterintuitive to the way people break things down in everything. Donald Trump said this, and then she said that, and then the audience said this. Well, if all we're doing is commenting after the fact, that doesn't tell us anything. Well, Trump never said this, and now the San Francisco 49ers always do this. Most of these nevers and alwayses are not true at all. That doesn't make for very easy bite-sized headlines and analysis and stuff like that. That is how media works. But it's the truth. People are like, this guy is a counterpuncher. This guy isn't a counterpuncher. The last two fights of his that you've watched, he counterpunched 40% of the time. Mm-hmm. He isn't a counterpuncher. Nate Diaz isn't always heavy on his
front. Isn't it important, though, to get the audience, get your opponent to believe that you're something specific, and then you can be something different?
Conor McGregor never throws leg kicks. If Diaz believes that, if he really believes that, he's in trouble.
Yeah.
Nate Diaz is always heavy on his front leg. If Conor McGregor believes that, he's in trouble. And if somebody who bets money on fighting believes one of those things, and somehow they're in trouble. These are fluid martial artists. These are fluid sportsmen. Football teams, oh man, they use a running offense. The next game, though, sometimes they'll use more of something else. Yeah. These absolutes,
based on factors, that's all it is.
Yes, exactly. And these absolutes are the reason that most analysis is for entertainment. If you want to do more than that, you got to go further than he's a dynamic striker and he's got great takedown defense, whatever. I mean, we have to dig, and we have to deal with the variables and the lack of true knowledge if you're really going to examine.
Well, I mean, one of the things, you know, people would say it's cut and dry right now is that Nathan Diaz is better on the ground than Conor McGregor. We saw that in the first fight because Nathan Diaz got a jiu-jitsu move, a rear naked choke submission, despite the fact that he smashed him in the face to get that thing.
Yeah.
So people would think that Nathan is the better jiu-jitsu guy. Maybe if they put on a kimono, maybe he is the guy.
Maybe he's not.
Maybe he's not.
Probably he is.
Probably he is.
He's done it longer. That's one insight.
Exactly. But Conor is so smart. He's an evolved martial artist. You know, he took something away from that first fight, that first loss with Nathan Diaz. And what he did is he decided to employ a Marcelo Garcia black belt, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, Dylan Danis, to help him work on his game.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if anybody, I know our viewers know who Marcelo Garcia is, but if you go to jiu-jitsu circles and you ask them who the greatest jiu-jitsu fighter, player, practitioner ever in the entire game is, it will probably be Marcelo Garcia. So when you're talking about the highest level, this is a black belt under this guy, and Connor's working with him.
Yeah.
He is going to be more prepared than he has ever been prepared in the jiu-jitsu realm.
Yes. And now, and then we've got to figure out what, in what ways. So in some is this guy can look and go.
Position, though. Wouldn't it be?
And the Diaz brothers, here's a few things they often do.
Right.
Let's drill for that specific scenario. Also, just the acclimatization. It's like you're working certain things that in MMA are our priorities. Getting back up, trying to advance your position, using a re-guard to heist your hip to get back to things that you do in mixed martial arts to get away from. So he's training those familiar with the high-quality black belt. So there's certain things that he's experiencing. If you can't make it work against this guy, then we haven't got you
right.
good enough. We need you to work it against him. And so that's great. But at the same time, I play piano like this. If I go and I bring in the world's best dueling piano guy and I work with him for 8 weeks, I'm going to still do it like this.
Sure.
And then he and I will duel and he'll still out-piano me.
Sure. That's very, very true. But at the same time, you're not doing this, bringing in thing.
No.
You already have a comprehension
true.
Of what's going on.
Yeah.
And there's some little tricks and details
Absolutely.
That this dueling piano guy 100%. Can teach you. So Chase has given us the wrap. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I promise you we're talking more about UFC 202 and this incredible rematch main event between Nathan Diaz and Conor McGregor. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you chatting about UFC 202 that goes down Saturday night in Las Vegas, Nevada. The main event, Conor McGregor, Nathan Diaz, 170 pounds. And you get the sense, that based on what we saw in the first fight with Conor, Conor looked really good in round one. You know, just didn't, because of the heaviness of the fight, because of all these unknown factors, he just couldn't get the job done. He got to leave that night with all this new knowledge.
Yes, yes.
Now he goes back to his team who are committed to making him not only victorious in this fight, but as they're trying to create the best martial artist possible with this mentally strong, physically gifted workhorse of Conor McGregor. And because of that, because of his physical abilities, his mental abilities, and how good he looked in round one, you believe he'll be able to do that for the majority of the rounds in this rematch.
Yeah, I think so. But what is...
I think so, too.
Yeah, what is
but I'm not sure.
Well, of course we're not sure. Anyone who tells you they're sure is lying. And that includes Conor McGregor and John Kavanaugh.
Okay.
Or they just don't understand. There is unconscious incompetence.
Sure.
Like, people will yell into Twitter, you know, like, you can feel how hard. You idiot! Don't you know this guy has no cardio? You don't even know what cardio is.
Yeah.
That endurance within a fight, the term cardio is a made-up term it's not cardiovascular.
Yeah.
So we're already starting from a place where it's not even what it is.
But I think one of the reasons why is because that's what we've been taught from fighters in the past. They say, you know, there's still fighters that are competing at the highest level that believe that road work is the key to victory. That let's go for a couple mile run and this is the thing that'll get us over the edge.
And it might actually.
It might.
It might. But the main thing that long distance running will do will make you good at long distance running.
Right.
That's its main function.
Yeah.
But the reason that a lot of fighters are putting back in just pure cardiovascular activity is for the recovery.
Mm.
So, and even there'll be one or two 30 to 45 minute runs a week for some fighters now that are adding it back in addition to the anaerobic work. And anaerobic work is like sprint hard uphill for 30 seconds. Or 35 and go back down at a medium speed for 25 and sprint again. And it's just anaerobic activity. And sprint, improve your ability to recover in bursts. That's how Tyron Woodley fights. That's an element to fighting mixed martial arts.
Do you have to have a specific body type to fight that way? You look at Woodley, he looks like an athlete. He looks like a football player that would need to go in bursts. Where you look at a guy like Carlos Condit, he doesn't have that output.
But he's still, when Condit puts together his best combinations, defends a takedown, circles out, pressures it into the cage and pushes off, that was anaerobic work. And now he'll dance around and slide, try to lower his heart rate, flush his body, gently move. It's still... Okay. There's still that big anaerobic component. But then guys are putting back the aerobic component 30 to 45 minutes, once or twice a week even, at a speed in which you could almost have a conversation because of the ability to recover. Even in whether in those 30 seconds, that capacity there, or in the 1 minute in between rounds. So it's all valid. But when you go, this guy doesn't have a gas tank, most of the time, a lot of these terms, like gas tank.
Is it just old terms?
Yes,
People have taken this from boxing. This has been the vocabulary that we've been taught through wrestling and boxing and any other combat sports that we just kind of use.
And takedown defense.
Yeah.
That's nonsensical. There's no such thing, because in 90% of wrestling situations, we're not attempting a takedown.
We're just wrestling.
We're wrestling. And sometimes to tire another guy, sometimes you get a small advantage, sometimes you get him to engage a certain thing, and at what moment will hit the elbow. There's 100 reasons. So people, he defended the takedown. There was no takedown. But if you don't understand wrestling, you will, you know, there was a lot of work against the fence, but no takedowns were attempted. Okay, well, that's better, but you sound disappointed. There's a lot of amazing fighting going on. That's fighting. That's what is happening there.
I think the casual fan base, they don't want to see that as fighting, though.
But that's our job.
That work up against the cage where it's like, it looks like nothing is really going on, but two men are exerting a ridiculous amount of energy. I think to the casual fans, they see that as the non-fighting aspect in MMA.
Maybe. But stopping you from doing things is fighting. And if a lot of people watch football, and they're like, well, you know, there was a one-yard run was attempted, and it was stopped at the one-yard line. And then no yards were gained. Well, I guess that's not football.
See, I have no idea because I'm sorry.
You executed a play and I stopped. That's football.
Right.
That's exactly what's
going on. Is it because there's history, though?
Yes, 100%.
You and I think we've talked about this in the past. The reason why people can connect to football or connect to baseball, hockey, or basketball is because we've all had a chance to play that in the yard at school, or playing with buddies in a back rink. Whatever the case may be, we have a personal connection to it, so we can understand it. If you've never been up in that situation where you're pushing up against somebody and they're pushing back, and you don't know how physically taxing that is, you just don't know.
But that, and when I talk about this sometimes, and because I still am just so passionately want people to see all this stuff. I sometimes people would be like, why are you criticizing me? And I'm not criticizing the people. Like, I'm not criticizing the viewer. I'm criticizing us.
Yeah, for not.
I'm criticizing the machine. I'm criticizing commentary and analysis. And I'm criticizing what people call journalism and its obnoxious filling of all the space with Twitter beefs and who's dating who and what this guy said and what's the next title shot and what are these fake rankings. And, you know, because all of that is filling up so much space that here we are, 2001, when did the Zuffa era begin?
2001.
So that's 15 years. We've filled the space with so much Twitter beefs and with so much who you calling out after this and it was a good fight, but there was no finishes. So much of this nonsense that we actually haven't even learned what the sport is. And it's also a function of the sport having such incredibly exciting moments. Those moments are so exciting, and they have such a big payoff. They're so big that we fixate on them, and we forget.
If every other moment isn't as big as that, it's like they're shit moments.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's also because of the modern people and the modern attention span and when fighting kind of came out.
Because I'll tell you, there's people in our people came to me today saying, you know, yeah, the main event's good, but I'm not really super stoked about this card. I'm like, you know, Anthony Johnson and Teixeira is the co-main event. Yeah. Donald Cerrone, arguably the most exciting fighter on the roster, is also on the card.
You know, this Tim Means guy fights,
Tim Means,
right?
Lorenz Larkin versus Neil Magny. You go through, there is just a boatload of reasons to love this card. Chase giving us the wrap again. We're going to take another break. We're still talking about UFC 202. And, of course, we'll be joined on the line by Stefan Patry, as there will be the return of TKO happening in November. Welcome back to Five Rounds. Today we're chatting about UFC 202 going down on Saturday night, and we're just talking about, you know, what to expect, what do fans want, what thrills the viewers of this, why they get mad, why they're so emotionally invested, and why they can't just enjoy the action or the martial arts abilities. And I think one of the reasons why is because you actually have to put on some gloves, you have to put on some grappling shorts, you have to go get hit in the face.
I don't know.
No, you don't think so?
Because although people play flag football a little bit or touch football, without they just have been exposed to it because of the way it came out. Now, I really think a part of it is that the moments of excitement. Right now, people watch 3-minute long clips of things.
Yeah.
And things that were exciting or funny or interesting 5 years ago are not as funny or interesting. Only the first cat playing a piano is really good. After that, it's like, oh, look, there's six cats playing six pianos. Oh, look, there's a hairless cat with a hat playing a piano. Like, it's got to keep elevating. But, and that's our culture. And because of that, if it's only knockouts, I mean, I could be totally wrong on this, but I don't think there are times where I'll freak out. Like, usually on a Sunday morning, I'm usually hungover or tired, and I'll see something. I'll be like, post-fight analysis. And then I'll look, and they'll go, well, it's kind of a lackluster card. Weren't many finishes. That's not f***ing analysis.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know if that happens in football.
Yeah.
I don't know if
I don't think it does.
On Monday, people say
that wasn't
you go
good
out
game.
And they say, oh, the football games were boring. And that's somehow analysis. No, I mean, that's only people who don't like football look at a 7-0 football game and go, that's boring. Well, I don't really like football, but I love like high scoring game. I love long bombs. I love long punts.
Yes. And I think that's one of the reasons why sorry to cut you off is because when they view something, they can put themselves there because they've thrown a football. They've caught it. I remember when I first coming from a karate background, when I saw one of my first UFCs and Hoist Gracie getting an armbar, I'm like, that doesn't look like that hurts. That doesn't. It's like I'm not buying that until I got arm locked for the first time.
Now kids do play around with that kind of stuff, and it's like, according to that, we'd be like, well, I threw a football and I've been tackled, but I don't really understand what happens in that 0-yard thing.
Right.
So therefore, it sucks.
Okay.
We've never done that. You and I have never stood in a front and tried to stop while a quarterback runs through a thing. And you know, we've never done that. But we don't suddenly go, wow, this isn't football. God, oh, this is boring. Because somewhere along the lines, our exposure to it, again, it's not the fault of the viewer. It's the fault of the product. And maybe it isn't even, because maybe it's just only now, 16 years into baseball, did they go, it's a hit, it's a catch. He threw it out. Because now they go, oh, this kind of hook thing. Over time, the understanding gets deeper. A few people and a lot of people, a couple of commentators, and then all the viewers. You talk to any of the guys, we have another office here that does fantasy sports. Talk to them about football or baseball. You talk to any regular viewers of those things. They know so much more about their sports. But their sports, baseball's hundreds of years old, you know? So in that time, the global understanding of baseball. So maybe it isn't even the product's fault. Maybe it's just the age. Maybe at this
we need more time.
We need more time, because anything that you call like, oh, well, this and the compartmentalization of the way it's presented. At one time, I've literally only 5 years ago, you'd see somebody say, you know, pop up and talk about fights either before or after. And they'd go, well, this guy's a better boxer, but this guy's a better wrestler. And this guy's got better takedown defense and he's got takedowns. Well, if that's all we have to do is we've just got three things and we just say who's better, no real quantification. We'll just take two guys and arbitrarily say one's better at one thing and there we've done it.
Isn't that how it started?
Yeah, that is how it started, but it must go further.
Yeah, it has
now,
to go further.
I think a mistake is then to just make more categories. Well, he's got better volume, but he's got better accuracy. And you can't just list attributes. It's not Dungeons and Dragons. There's an art to it. And art gets demystified. There's an art to baseball and there's an art to football and there's certainly an art to golf. But we can all understand it now. And it wasn't done by making more categories. It wasn't done by saying, well, there's now a, although baseball sure has a lot of numbers, a lot of numbers, and people like it. But it went that direction. I think we need to understand it more and we have to prioritize. So when you do see something that is really cool or any people out there are seeing it and they go, wow, I can't believe how beautiful this is, you got to share it. You got to point it out to people. You got to question things, you know. And you got to see that this is an unpredictable sport and you have to love that about it. You have to love it.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, more discussion about UFC 202, the entire card. Of course, the main event, Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz, the rematch. But there is so many fights that could have title implications. More Five Rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you. Coming up November 4th. Mark it on your calendar. It is a date that should not be missed. It is the return of TKO. We are joined on the line by the promoter, Stefan Patry, an infamous promoter here in Canada, maybe around the globe. Stefan, thank you so much for joining us. And everybody is excited about this endeavor. TKO 36, the return of one of the greatest promotions, I think, ever in mixed martial arts. And that's not hyperbole. When you look at the stable of fighters you've created, George St. Pierre, Pat Cote, Mark Hominick, Sam Stout, you gave them a platform for them to go on to the next level. Tell fans, tell the viewers, tell our audience, what can they expect from the return of TKO?
Well, the platform just got a whole lot bigger. They can expect fireworks. They can expect fighters that are going to surpass themselves, because not only are they fighting on the biggest platform in Canada, they're now fighting on the biggest platform in the world, which is UFC Fight Pass. And, you know, it's going to be exciting. It's exciting for us. I'm very excited. Exciting for the fans. But it's also very, very exciting for the fighters.
You have a relationship with the UFC. But for people that don't know, how did this deal with Fight Pass, how did that come about?
Well, as you know, I've a very good relationship with them for over 15 years now, ever since they bought the company in 2001. And we worked on many different levels. With fighters, with different things. And, you know, after the fiasco, I would say, that happened with S1 and the Quebec government, I was there, you know, I talked to them, you know, on and off for the past couple of weeks. And there was a mutual interest from us and from UFC to bring back TKO. And we sat down and started talking about a deal. It's been... took a couple of weeks, obviously, with the sale of the UFC. It slowed things a little bit, but we ended up reaching an agreement where everybody's very happy.
Stefan, people, you know, follow fighting in a variety of ways and on a variety of levels, but historians see TKO as a contemporary of the UFC, especially up here in Canada. Yeah. I mean, we grew up on TKO just as much as the UFC in the early days, very much so. And did you foresee it coming back? Like, you know, we think of TKO as a part of the history of fighting in Canada. Did you foresee this coming in and starting a new history?
Well, honestly, Robin, I was expecting a buzz, but never like this. The buzz is absolutely incredible. I've given about 300 interviews since Thursday, since the press conference. The UFC Canada office are receiving tons of requests as well. The social media buzz is simply incredible. We've sold more than 1,200 tickets in, like, what, 5 days? We're getting requests from all over the world. I mean, I didn't even know there were so many fighters in Canada. I mean, I didn't count them, but I received hundreds of resumes from fighters wanting to fight. And, you know, that has a lot to do with, obviously, TKO's history, but also the opportunity to fight on Fight Pass. And, you know, I could see the difference between this announcement that TKO is back and, for example, when I launched Instinct. The buzz was pretty good. We had a good, you know, a good run, but nothing compared to this. It's just it's just crazy, and it's very exciting for us.
When it comes to, I think if people are objective and they look at the TKO organization and your history, one thing is certain. You try your best to deliver fan-friendly fights, and you're giving the fans the stars of tomorrow today. When you look at all the fighters that have been on your roster, multiple UFC champions, fighters that have challenged for the UFC championship, how do you find that next crop, especially now when we're kind of saturated? I'm sure you're being bombarded by coaches and fighters from all over the world. How do you make sure that you're giving the fans the product that resonates the TKO brand?
Well, it's been my schedule since Thursday. I've been doing interviews and sitting in my living room watching fights. Every single guy I receive a resume from, I just watch their fights. I want to make sure, because a big part of TKO's past success has always been the matchmaking, always been the quality of the fights, the quality of the matchups, and you know, that's gonna be the job come November 4th to not only deliver very good prospects, but to put those prospects in fights that will matter to the fans.
Stefan, there's a few people that you'll have on this card, some of which it's just shocking to me were available that nobody understood how to use them. One of those is Chris Hordeski, one of the most exciting fighters going. You had him fighting for you in the earliest of days with the great Sean Tompkins. How weird is it that that kid was just available and waiting and needing somebody to give him the right fight?
Well, to me, it didn't make sense. I mean, when I took the decision to start back TKO, Chris Hordeski was one of my top three priorities to sign with the organization. People don't realize, but he has a great record. He's 21-6. He's 21-6, and he's not done by any means. He's only 28 years old, and for him right now, he wants to make TKO. The buzz that TKO is creating and the impact that TKO is creating by coming back, he wants to do the exact same thing to his career. And, now he's coming back home. He's coming back to where Team Tompkins has been so successful, which is TKO. And that's how Chris feels. He feels that now he's in an environment where he can go back to the drawing boards and re-become the Sidney Crosby of MMA.
Stefan, how do you ensure longevity? You've had 35 events with TKO in the past. This is the 36th show. How do you make sure that there's 50 shows, that there's 100 shows? What do you have to do to ensure that you're profitable, that you're doing the right things for the fighters, dealing with the commission? How do you make sure? What do you need to do to make sure that this lasts?
Well, what Instinct was missing back in 2012 was a deal like the deal we just did with Fight Pass. UFC Fight Pass guarantees us longevity. This deal, obviously, I don't want to go into the details of the deal, but it does give us the guarantee that TKO will be there for a very, very long time. And 8 years is not enough for me. I want to push this brand all the way back to the top where it was. And I do believe that TKO will become the number one show on Fight Pass. And I'm pretty sure that the next GSPs, the next Conor McGregor, the next top stars are all going to come from our show, and whether they're Canadians or not. But we're confident that the next big stars of the UFC are going to come from us. And I think the UFC does believe that as well.
I think I hear you got the best commentary team in the business, Stefan.
Well, apparently you guys are not all that available lately.
We'll make ourselves available. If you hear anything,
that's fine.
If you hear anything through the business that we're not available, we'll take vacation time just to do it.
Stefan, one thing I want to ask you is about this venue, the Tohu. The last show you were supposed to have was supposed to go down at this beautiful venue. And if our viewers have not seen it, why did you decide to go into this new type of format?
It's the most beautiful venue to launch TKO again. The first season, the first six events will all happen at the Tohu. It's a beautiful venue. It's high-tech venue. It's brand new. It's a circular, so it's round, so you can see well from everywhere. It holds 1,721, which is a very good number for us. And the atmosphere in there, the comfort, the special effects, the sound and lightning we'll be able to do in this building is going to be out of this world. I mean, people have been used to beautiful setups with TKO, but what happens when they see what's up on November 4th, they're going to be like, okay, now we're at a different level.
We know Derek Gauthier taking on Chris Horodescu. We know Lindsey Garbutt's on the card. Remy Bossieri's on the card. Do you have everything set in stone? Do you have your main event? Do you have your main card filled out? Can you give us some details of what fans will expect on November 4th?
Well, we've announced three fights so far. We're obviously going to announce the whole main card, I would say, by middle of next week. So that's the top eight fights. And then there's going to be six prelims for a total of 14 bouts. We're not about fight orders, who's going to headline, who's not going to headline. I'm very, very, very comfortable with Horodecki fighting Goethe in the main event. Those are two TKO veterans.
Yep.
But we're still working on a deal that could probably become the main event, and Chris and Gauthier would do co-main event.
So you got to tell us what that is. What are you working on?
I can't, but I think Horodecki and Gauthier is very solid. The fans here are freaking out about this fight coming. Everybody wants to see that fight. I mean, and then we announced Robert Serres from London fighting London, England fighting Remy Bussière, which is going to be a barn burner. Two super strikers that are going to go head to head, toe to toe. And then obviously we announced the fight between Maggie Burchell and Lindsey Garbutt. And then obviously we announced all those guys that are going to fight on the card: KJ Laramie, Jesse Ronson. I mean, all the guys we announced so far are all fighting on the card. The only guy that we announced that is not fighting on the first fight on the first card is Gabriel Ovik-Strania. He's only going to fight in January. We have the Jourdain brothers. We have this is going to be. I can say in advance, TKO 36 will be the best TKO in history.
It is going to be a great night of mixed martial arts, all going down in Montreal, November 4th. It is the return of TKO, TKO 36 Resurrection. He is Stefan Patry, the promoter. Stefan, we will be very excited to work alongside you on November 4th, and we can't wait. Congratulations on all your success, and I'm sure we'll be hanging out in Montreal.
I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome back to Five Rounds today. Ramsey and Black with the UFC 202 going down Saturday night. Conor McGregor, Nathan Diaz. But there are a slew of reasons to tune into this fight card. As I mentioned, the co-main event, Anthony Johnson, Glover Teixeira. And one of the questions I want to ask you, you and I were having this discussion, our buddy Evan Boris, one of the coaches down at the Black Zillions. Anthony Johnson has a lot of stuff on his plate right now, the week of media obligations. This could be a distraction, but with a week, he's already ready to go, right?
You're supposed to be ready to go week of. You're supposed to have got yourself, you know, other than making the weight, which is a really ugly process. You're supposed to be sharp. You're supposed to have done your sparring. You're supposed to be mentally focused. You're supposed to have the plan together. You're supposed to have executed the few specific things you're going to do. Hopefully, in drills that simulate things that you're sure he's going to do, but you don't have to live and die by that. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to have done all that preparation. And Anthony Johnson always does. They're all, Evan was basically saying, you know, we just want to see him.
Punchy kicky.
Yeah. Just the performance that shows what we did, because what he did, he's ready, and he can win this fight.
And that is the Anthony Johnson style, the punchy kicky.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when I was in Las Vegas, I talked to Anthony Johnson, and I asked him about learning new things. And he's like, you know, I'm just the type of guy that if my coach teaches me something and I don't get it in the first couple of times, it's not meant to be.
Yeah.
And Is that a bad thing? When you look at Anthony Johnson and the way that he has achieved success in mixed martial arts, it's by kicking you in the head, it's by punching you, it's by stalking you, it's by avoiding the takedown, and being stronger and meaner and more powerful.
Yeah, it's true. Remember, you asked for, you mentioned that to Firas when we were in Montreal, and Firas said, well, I make a deal with them. I say, try it for 2 weeks, and then if you don't like it, you don't have to use it. And Firas is a genius for a million reasons, but he's a genius in this reason, too, because most people who try something for 2 weeks will be better at it. And by the time they're better at it, they're more interested in it. Oh, this is cool. Oh, I caught that guy with it.
Yeah.
Or I stopped that thing with it. And so they'll use it. And because I've had a conversation with Joe Silva a couple of times about, you know, Joe is convinced – and he has been exposed to a lot more fights than any of us, probably than anyone.
Yeah.
But he is convinced that there are things that you are better at learning than others. And
which makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense. But his examples for it were anecdotal. Pete Spratt. Oh, Pete Spratt just couldn't learn jiu-jitsu. Well, I mean, what was the environment? Anecdotal, and Joe will be the first to tell you, Joe is a real science, like he's committed to the scientific method. He would say, well, anecdotal evidence actually isn't enough. But it's his belief based on his exposure to these situations. And like I said, Joe Silva has been exposed to a lot more fighters than anybody else that lives, probably. You know, and that's probably true. So it's his belief that certain guys just will not learn certain things. My belief, my argument with him, and it's fun to debate with Joe because he's brilliant and he likes to debate and he likes to be proven wrong. He's seeking being proven wrong because that's what science minds do. They don't just stick something in the ground and go, see, I told you, MacGruber doesn't have a a gas tank. They want to be proven wrong. Yeah. They're looking for
credible argument. Yes. Give me a credible argument.
Yeah. And when you do, and it makes me think, and then maybe I even change my mind, I'll go back on it.
With the goal of being right. That's what the end goal is. Okay, I need your information to lead me to the right answer.
Yes. And if in a week I know the right answer because I was wrong, that's
growth. A good thing. Yeah.
That's how we're going to get smarter. And then a year later, we're going to gather some more information. That's what we're after. There's this idea that people, oh, he's a flip-flopper. I want that. I want people to be flip-floppers. I want to follow somebody who leads, whether we're talking politics or my coach or my boss. I want somebody who, when presented with evidence that disproves their idea, they change. And that takes us right back to McGregor. McGregor and his coach believed they had the answers for every fighter. Diaz strutted up there and said, no, you don't, and I'm not surprised you don't. They now have new questions, new evidence, new challenges, and they have to go find those answers they think they have, and that's why this fight will be interesting. Nate Diaz says, oh, you think you do. I'm willing to take that test, and here we are about to watch one of the great fights ever.
We're going to take our final break. When we come back, we're wrapping things up here on Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to the show. UFC 202 going down on Saturday. Ram Dean and Black with you. Rumble Johnson, Glover Teixeira. Teixeira kind of running his own camp right now. Do you find that strange? He has that relationship with American Top Team, but you saw some of the viz of him being in Connecticut. Should you be your own general when you're going into battle?
My feeling is the predominant feeling is that can get you as good as you've ever been, but not necessarily better. So if he thinks as good as he's ever been is going to be enough to beat Anthony Johnson, he can be in shape, he knows how to fight, he can get sharp, he can bring in some specialists to teach him some tools, but that's the question.
A couple of quick fights to talk about. Donald Cerrone, Rick Story. Donald Cerrone, again, fighting this fight at 170 pounds. People talking about the rankings. Well, he should be in the rankings. Well, he got a win over Alex Oliveira at 170 pounds. Alex Oliveira dropping back there,
they 55ers.
Alex Oliveira dropping down to fight Will Brooks at 155 pounds. Then his fight with Patrick Cote. Patrick Cote, not really a ranked guy. We know Patrick Cote is a super dangerous guy at 185 pounds, 205 pounds. That's a legit win. But this fight with Rick Story, a guy that's designed for 170 pounds, big and strong and very difficult to beat down, what do you envision?
Rick Story versus Saffiedine.
Yeah.
We didn't see Story winning that fight.
No, we didn't.
We thought Saffiedine,
finesse.
Finesse and skill is there to beat this guy. We also, talking about variables and being prepared to learn from being wrong, we didn't think Cowboy was going to be Pat. So here we are with two guys we underestimated last time, and we got to get them right or wrong. I mean, realistically, I'm a Cowboy fan, but he's fighting something very unique and a real 170, so I'll go with Story, but I'll be very excited to find out I'm wrong.
It is another show in the books. The big event goes down this weekend, UFC 202. We got to thank our producer, Chase Kaiser. He's Robin Black. Thanks to Stefan Patry. TKO 36 goes down November 4th in Montreal. I'm John Ramdean. We'll see you guys next week after UFC 202.